Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. Happy Friday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. We are in. We are crossing fingers that the skies don't open up. Some of us either are going to see Nebraska baseball or you have Junior's Wood Bat Tournament, which I'm pretty geeked about.
Did you end up buying him that wood bat?
Dude, I caved.
What is it, like a nice piece of oak? What is it? I don't even know what wood bats are made out of anymore.
Dave Minerick, Cornhusker State Games, Nebraska Sports Council, his son, was helping us. Mm. And it was awesome. Phenomenal service. We went to Shields. And shameless shout out. Sorry. But, hey, dude was all about it. Knew the different choices. I clearly never swung a bat very well in my career, and the wood bat I have, my grandpa Hunt made me circa 1992. All right, there was no lightning strike, there was no split tree a la Roy Hobbs, but that's the wood bat I have. What we purchased for him was on sale, and the running joke all week has been, you know, how quickly do we get that bad boy corked? And kidding, you know, it's going to be the old George Brett treatment of his bat the minute he takes position tonight. I'm excited, though, because old co-host from Columbus, Dave Gustafson, he has the Columbus Mariners. That's the team he manages and coaches. His boy is playing in this tournament this weekend. I didn't reach out to Gus today. I should have, depending on if Columbus and the Lincoln A's play one another this weekend. We'll see who wins, who doesn't. But we may have a Gus appearance on Monday, just either to rub it in or pay off wagering. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's the Sox tournament, and we have friends over on that team. So that's just over here, at least locally in Lincoln at Fleming Field, not far from where we're at here. So, no, I'm excited about it. I want, you know, warmer temperatures. I'm going to whine like a wuss till we get them. It's not bad out, but I don't want any rainfall. Clearly, the NCAA was worried about weather when picking the host sites. And of all the potential host sites for college baseball's postseason, to Omaha, seven conferences that are represented, but none from the Big Ten. Great question by Mitch Sherman. Wonder why that happened. The Big Ten being idiotic with the non-conference issue. As in, good luck, eat your own, but there'll be no non-conference games for you to crank up your RPI. Florida, Gonzaga, Louisiana Tech, Mississippi State, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Stanford, TCU, Tennessee, Texas, Tech, and Vandy, no Lincoln, no Creighton either, because that was also a discussion point, right? Creighton may get the nod as kind of a dress rehearsal for the College World Series. So that's the news today. The bigger picture for Nebraska is going to be, do you handle business this weekend? And right now, I know Michigan looms, but Nebraska, they're going to treat it and take it one game at a time. We'll hear from Will Bolton in about 20 minutes. But you've got to, I hate this, but you got to go sweep, right? You just do. despite Northwestern's offense, despite, you know, they are on scholarship too, you've got to sweep. You got to keep pace with Indiana and then hope you trounce Michigan, because again, thank you, Big Ten. You have no Big Ten baseball tournament. You can go get your automatic bid in most years by winning the conference tournament. Or if you win the regular season crown, you're good. The good news is the Big Ten, despite not having baseball last year very much when the pandemic hit, you're on the heels of Michigan playing great baseball, going to the College World Series final against Vandy. They were up 1-0 in that best of three. Vandy won 2 straight. You know, Vandy's got a major league pitching staff. They're just holding on to those kids before they get drafted in the first 12 picks. And, you know, that was a giant statement 2 seasons ago by the Big Ten, by Michigan. Well, you got Michigan, you have Indiana, you have Iowa, you have Nebraska, teams that have done well this year. And I love the attitude and the focus of Nebraska baseball. I like how they win. I like how they pitch. I like how they bounced back last weekend. The thing that's always, you know, rearing its head right now is that margin of error is slim to none and slim left town for getting a regional host site. And then when you fall like you did to Rutgers, Nebraska did what they needed to do. They bounced back last weekend in that Piscataway set up with, you know, 1-1 against Indiana, and then they took 2 in a row from Rutgers. You got to carry that momentum forward now and take down the Wildcats. The good news is you're not having to play in Northwestern. You at least get to be here, you know, weather permitting, and excited for Nebraska to keep on rolling. They have found ways to just lock in, and Will Bolt, I love listening to him talk because, and this isn't to continue to gush, but it is Saban-like. It's like Will Bolt has thousands of years of experience as a head coach. He doesn't. He has good experience, but he not only says all the right things, his teams do what he says. I mean, they are fundamentally sound. They're great defensively. They attack the baseball. They're aggressive on the base paths. And he is very transparent about what it takes to win at this level. And he's always been a grinder, man. And he was great here at Nebraska. And what he's passed on to his team along with his staff, they're for real. And he's a coach I love hearing from because he's 1,000% on it with what he says. And then those results translate.
Yeah, and all those things I agree with. It's just in the Big Ten, the margin of error is so small. This is like the Big 12 when they're trying to get into the college football playoff. Oklahoma, they can't slip up. If they lose,
you got to win your non-conference game.
if Oklahoma finishes the season at 11-1, it's a tough shake for them to try to get into the college football playoff. Depends who you lose to, but in how the Big 12's looked, I guess, aside from last year, Iowa State was pretty good last year. But aside from last year, Oklahoma's known going into the season, we need to go run the table every single year to go get into the college football playoff. And in Husker baseball, they had won every single season series against their Big 12 opposition until they ran into Rutgers. Mm-hmm. They lose all 3 to Rutgers, and that's one weekend, and it takes you straight out of regional host territory.
It's,
one weekend.
It's brutal. It not only does it take you out of hosting position, but then it sends you as a 2 seed likely to Arkansas if we're looking at projections, right? And that sucks. That's not where you want to be. You'll take on the best team in college baseball. You've got great familiarity. There's wonderful storylines attached with Van Horn and Will Bolt if that's how it happens. But good luck and God bless.
That's a
against
tough road getting through,
good
yeah.
luck and God bless against that Arkansas team.
And that's just Big Ten baseball. You got to keep your focus up for the entire season. And that's not even just this year whenever there's no non-conference. You got to keep it up all year round whenever you're even playing non-conference opponents to get that RPI up a little bit. You still got to keep your focus through the Big Ten season, because really at the end of the day, if you're making the NCAA tournament out of the Big Ten, you are head and shoulders above the rest of the conference.
You are. You got
to
be.
And you can't afford to slip up when you're head and shoulders above the rest of the conference.
No. So, Elijah, you spent a couple of years playing left tackle. I really enjoy this footage here from Cam Jurgens. Not only is he a beast with what he's put up with the numbers and the squats and the strength numbers that got released, but how did you work on your lateral foot speed? Did you shadow block a potentially pissed off bull in your field? down near Beatrice, because I'm watching footage right now of Cam Jurgens working on Pass Pro and shuffling right to left and left to right. And wisely, the bull decides to take a right turn and head into the pen.
Well, did you also see the video of Phelan Sanford?
He's kind of nice.
He was essentially blocking a bull down on his farm, wherever. I'm not sure where his farm is located. I know the Jurgens farm is near Beatrice. Mm. But back to your question, with lateral foot speed, I typically didn't use a bull. I know that might not be conventional in this state. I use like the little tiny little ladder things that you can step over, you know, right, to use that. But I think a bull works even better. It really gives you that accurate sense of a big back 10 nose guard. Yeah. And center is one of those unique positions whenever you're pass blocking, where with the left tackle and the left guard and all that, you're trying to get depth a little bit because the guy is going to try to beat you deep into the pocket. You're creating that pocket. Whereas the center, you're more attacking and lateral with how you're going to be pass blocking. Usually you're going to have a nose guard that's somehow shaded on you, not going to be straight up eye to eye, going to be either on one of your shoulders or on the other. So you got to use that lateral and kind of attack, and it looks great against that bull. That's all I got to say. That pass block looks awesome. I just gonna want to see him flip it around and snap straight into that bull.
Yeah. Bull versus Jurgens. No, thank you. I would feel bad. That's beyond bullfighting. I would feel bad for that bull. But back to Phelan Sanford. When you look at his point total and where he's at from a strength and conditioning standpoint, wow, first of all. Second of all, he's a guy you got to see with second team units, all right? And is that because you had guys injured, right? When we talk about who's that opposite cornerback next to Cam Taylor-Britt, and you've got Newsom and Clark. But Phelan Sanford's a guy that has made an impression, and you look at all the work he's put in, and you look at his strength and agility and just what he's been able to do, on top of the fact he's showed up, not just in spring testing numbers, but he showed up on the field. And it's awesome to have, you know, great walk-on stories from the Dundee County Pride, you know, the Pride of Dundee County himself. But it looks like this guy's making headway beyond just being a physical beast. He's making headway as a guy that can contribute and may contribute. And by the way, he's one hell of an athlete. So it's not just a nice story. It's a reality where this guy can contribute and potentially be an option at corner. Now, where's he at in the pecking order? We kind of laid out where we think things are at. You have a guy like Braxton Clark and Newsom. That Newsom's clearly your guy right now. That's opposite. But hey, if you have an option in Sanford to look at, and you feel comfortable with him being able to match up athletically, that's okay with me. That's okay with me, and you're seeing the proof in the work, and then you're seeing those numbers come out.
And I don't want to – this is not a jab at him in any way. This is just saying generally, just because you're the best athlete on the field does not mean you're the best football player on the field. It's a great start, being the guy who is most athletic. It's putting you in a great position to be the best on the field, but there's more to being a football player than being able to run fast 40 yards without pads on. There's more than being able to squat a lot or being able to hang clean a lot of weight.
Again, it's got to translate to the field and play.
Got to translate to the field, but at the end of the day, I'm going to be much more scared of going up against somebody who squats 600 pounds as opposed to a guy who squats 300 pounds on the football field. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you're the best football player, but it gives you those physical tools and the physical traits to be a good football player. So I'm excited to see what he can do, because he's still got some years of eligibility left. I don't think he's going to be an instant difference maker this year, but he could be one of those guys that comes in, shows himself well this year, and then maybe works his way into a starting role next year, the year after.
Let's spend some time on recruiting. And one of the guys Nebraska is trying to win over, one of the two kids from Kansas is Jaron Kanick out of Hayes, Kansas. And I saw the footage of his 100-meter track effort. And he ran a 10-300, which is phenomenal. And you think of guys like Irwin Sweetie and Eric Crouch, local products, that were big time wow factors and had nice careers. Crouch, obviously Hall of Famer and phenomenal, but you look at Kanick, and to put it in reference, I mean that's the same number as DJ Metcalf.
The exact same.
I mean, and I know Metcalf's a little bit bigger and a little heavier, but still, it's fantastic. And, you know, Nebraska, I still think, sits in a pretty good spot with Kanick. The real question is the good old Kansas boy and Brett Venables, Clemson's defensive coordinator. Remember Simmons, kid that was an Omaha kid that ended up down in Kansas City after his folks moved down there for their gig with Nebraska Furniture Mart. Nebraska was there in with Simmons. Simmons now a first-round pick that's, I think, going into his second year. It's kind of that hybrid linebacker safety spot with the Arizona Cardinals. Nebraska didn't end up closing the deal on him because Brett Venables said, oh, Kansas, my radar's up. Ding, ding, ding. Let's see if we can't get this kid at the last second. 3 years later, what happens? Simmons balls out for Clemson. Was phenomenal. Well, you have more tire kicking by Clemson, and it sounds like Clemson's trying to get him on a flight out for an official visit really early in June. So Nebraska's competition with Jaron Kanick from Hayes, Kansas, is the man himself, Brett Venables, from Clemson. What happens? Now, Clemson will probably try and work him out. Clemson's in on two other really high-profile linebackers from the region. It'll just kind of be interesting to see, A, if Kanick is interested in going that far away from home. B, if he can kind of ball out against some of these other 4- and 5-star prospects. I think he can, but you know, Nebraska still has a fighting chance with this. Derek Peterson's on the way.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Great to have you back. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Cedric Golden, Austin American statesman. Little college baseball thoughts from him, and we'll dive into the Randy Gregory situation. Situation being, what do you get from Randy Gregory with a new-look Dallas defense? So Cedric will talk Cowboys and projections with some of the NFL coming up here in 1 hour. Pride of Fairbury, Bill Dolman, NBC Sports in less than an hour. We welcome in with HailVarsity.com and magazine Derek Peterson at Dr. PDHV on Twitter is where you find him. He answers your mailbag questions and does an awesome job with the Varsity Club podcast. Dr. Petey, how's your Friday, man? What's up?
I'm good. Stressful times around the Peterson household, but no complaints. I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I hope that the stress dissipates. I'm sorry to hear that. How was Darian Daniels? How was that chat?
He was awesome. He's always been great to us at Hail Varsity, great to me. We developed the relationship when I wrote that that story on him and his brother and kind of how they're playing together for a year sort of came to be. He's a great guy. He's one of those guys that that you root for kind of when they move on. He's that kind of guy for me for sure. So yeah, I thought the podcast went really well. Thanks for plugging it. Everybody else should go listen to it.
Do so. Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, a whole platform, a podcast to check out with Hail Varsity. You know, it's awesome that he landed where he landed. San Francisco is one of those teams that's not far removed from a Super Bowl run and could anchor that defense. Also, Nate Gary finding his way to the Bay Area. So San Fran could be on the up and up. Interested in your thoughts here. I know you just wrote about it a day ago, and that's taking stock in Nebraska's quarterback room. And I think I'm kind of on the same page as many with not needing to necessarily look at quarterback for the portal. But you've spent an extensive amount of your time this last fall, right, checking out Harburg and up close and personal. Yep. And I know you had a great feature on him during last year's Hail Varsity yearbook. And you know, what are some of your takeaways here with what we got to see spring-wise with Harburg? I know there's still room for growth with Smothers, and he's a kid that'll keep grinding as well. But, you know, that backup spot behind Adrian, I'd love your take on, you know, some of your takeaways with Harburg. I'm intrigued, and quite honestly, just take the red hat off for a second. Change the uniform. If I've got a guy like Harburg with the tools he has, I think that's pretty awesome to try and mold.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of the consternation about backup quarterback and a lot of the maybe longing isn't the right word, but, you know, the talk about going to the transfer portal to bring in a backup that has experience. I mean, there are a lot of issues that come into play when you're going to try to do that. Mainly, there's just not going to be a ton of guys there available to fill that role. But the other thing, and I kind of noted this in my piece, was, you know, at the end of the day, like, do you really want to take those developmental reps away from Harburg or Smothers? Because if you were to bring in another guy, and, you know, I'm with you in thinking that it's not going to happen. Frost has said three times now it's not going to happen, so it's kind of a moot point. But just hypothetically, if you bring in another guy, you know, one of the two of Harburg or Smothers are going to suddenly just not get snaps, not get reps in practice. They're going to be a practice team player or whatever, and then you've got the other guy as sort of a third-string quarterback. I think the potential benefit for just letting those two continue to develop far outweighs, you know, the advantage of having a capable backup behind Adrian Martinez. Because I think what they found this spring is that he might not have experience at the D1 level. He has none. He might still need to sort of gain some comfort, gain some confidence in the offense, within the scheme, to sort of know what's required of him within the context of you know, in any given play. But it, as far as just like going in and being a Division I quarterback, being a Big Ten quarterback, I mean, I saw that from Harburg a year ago during his senior season in high school. I mean, he looked like a guy. I talked to his coach about this a bunch, and I talked to other people about this a bunch. He just looks like that kind of a player. And, you know, you can't really get experience without getting experience. And so, you know, if a situation arises where Adrian Martinez is unavailable, or, you know, what they would prefer, if they're up by 30 or so points going into the fourth quarter, you get Harburg in there, he's going to make mistakes, which you saw him make in the spring game. Or if it's Smothers, he's going to make mistakes too, which you saw him make in the spring game. They're still freshmen, but, you know, I think both of those guys, I think what they found is that both of those guys are completely capable quarterbacks. They have a bit different skill set from one another, but they're both capable quarterbacks, and so it's not going to be perfect, but if you have to go with one of those guys, I don't think there should be any, you know, like real pearl clutching going on if that has to happen, or true fear if that has to happen. I think both of those guys could operate at a decent level. I mean, we're talking about a backup quarterback, mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, they're not taking Adrian Martinez's job, so there's obviously going to be a drop-off if you go from the number one to the number two. But I also think, too, like some of the concern about Adrian is a little overblown. I mean, he's missed one or two games each season, and you know, he's played through stuff. He played through stuff at the end of last year and said that if they were going to play a bowl game, it would have been tough on him, but he would have done it. Mm-hmm. He played through stuff the back half of the 2019 season. He's lighter now. They got to keep him upright a little bit more, but I think the offensive line will be better. And so, you know, I think I feel comfortable with where they're at quarterback right now.
Derek Peterson's with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. And Derek, I want to move to some of these testing numbers that we saw this week. And obviously the name that jumped out to a lot of Husker fans was Phelan Sanford. He put up some pretty extraordinary numbers in testing. And I just want to know, are you buying stock on him after the spring that we saw?
As a special teams player, absolutely. We're kind of in the process of writing pieces for our the 2021 Nebraska football yearbook. And you know, as it relates to special teams, I think he could absolutely be a mainstay. I mean, he played in each of Nebraska's last five games last year as a special teams player. And I don't, you know, it has, you know, depending on who you're talking to, you say, oh, he's a special teams player. That carries a connotation of he's not good enough to play on the defense. I don't think it's that situation. They're really talented on defense. I don't think we should be. I've seen a couple people that have said, oh, he's going to push for starter snaps on defense, or he's going to play on defense or whatever. I don't think you should take it that far. But if he's a capable special teams player, I mean, clearly he is an athletic freak. And, you know, like Jacob Padilla likes to point out that Sanford either had triple doubles or flirted with triple doubles when he was playing high school basketball. He's a three-sport athlete in high school. Clearly has a lot of athleticism, and so for them, and strength too. Like we saw today, a little what did he squat? He squatted 500 pounds, hang clean 325. I mean,
it's Dr. Petey numbers.
That's a good dude. Oh God, no, that's a good dude. No, my numbers. I'm up there challenging with Cam Jurgens in the 723 squat.
You are okay.
That's where I'm at.
Wait, it's been Vodka Friday. All right, I love it.
can maybe Sanford feels like kind of like the Isaiah Stallbird role a couple years ago.
Sure.
If you remember kind of what he was able to do with special teams.
No, that is, well, it's an option, and the way Coach Fisher has that room rolling, I mean. I know that there's Newsom and Clark and Joseph, and I mean there's guys that are air quotes supposed to be in front of a Sanford, but you know what? Good on him continuing to grind, and those numbers speak for itself, and special teams.
Absolutely.
And beyond. I mean, I'm excited to have that option, and being a guy from Nebraska, you always kind of sentimentally root for Nebraska kids, walk on or scholarship. And that's good stuff. Derek Peterson's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Derek, know you're a big NBA guy, and I wanted to get your take on this here, about a minute and a half or so. But you know, do you have a reaction to load management specifically in the playoffs? I get it during the regular season, it's 82 games, and then if you do your job in the postseason, it's another 20 games potentially. That's a lot of basketball, and the turnaround time, there was not as much of a window, obviously, with COVID. You know, what's your take on this with guys maybe taking a game or taking some minutes off even during postseason?
No, I hate it. I hate it. And I say that acknowledging that this season is unlike any other because of the timeline that they finished the previous season on. I mean, if you look at the guys that played deep into the last postseason we went through, a lot of them are hurt right now, or a lot of them have been hurt throughout the season. I think there's a direct correlation. At the same time, Silver came in, and I'm, okay, let me say, I'm a little biased because I had a championship-caliber fantasy basketball team that was absolutely wrecked by teams like the Toronto Raptors deciding to just shit guys for no reason. Like, I knew Jeremy Grant was going to have a great year, and then he just didn't play the last, like, 25 games for the Pistons. I think it's one of those situations where they just need to shorten the regular season. Space games out more. Like, there's no reason that we should be playing. The regular season product has been diluted so much. And I think with Silver being so pro-player, I think as it relates to this conversation, mm-hmm. the toothpaste is all the way out of the tube with
sure.
this one. And I don't know how they're going to, I don't know, short of shortening the regular season, how they fix it, but it's a problem for them. It should be, because to me, I didn't care about this regular season. I mean, part of that is because Oklahoma City wasn't trying to win. I couldn't watch them, but part of it was because you look up every other night and dudes aren't playing. Like, the Nets guys were on TV constantly, and it was one of the three playing all the time. I don't want to see guys sitting in the playoffs. I think that's weak. I think that's mentally weak if you sit in the playoffs. The goal should be 16 games. Get 16 games to a title. That should be the goal. Don't sit games out. I think that's mentally weak. I hate the load management situation in the NBA, and I understand that they need to play fewer games for the players, and I understand that this was an exacerbated season, but real things got to change. Otherwise, I'm going to have a hard time getting invested in regular season. going forward.
Derek Peterson, HailVarsity.com and magazine at DrPDHV on Twitter is where you find him. Derek, thanks for jumping on, man. Best to you. We'll get caught up next week. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate you having me and letting me rant at the end.
Love it, brother. Take care. We'll hit some Husker baseball coming up. Some thoughts from Will Bolt.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HailVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for hanging out. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We talk load management. And it is something that's kind of wore out. And there's a lot of guys my age that just love hoops. There's a couple of baseball dads we'll get together with and have a cocktail or several and order a pizza and hang out in the garage and watch some NBA. And I love the athleticism. Not, you know, I'm not coaching, nor am I betting, so I don't really care about the shot selection. But let's just say there's a hell of a lot more threes due to the Curry era than there used to be. Transition threes, right? Instead of a two-on-one break, it's a two-on-one. Okay, here's a trailer. Let's kick out for three. But guys have been so skilled at shooting from the arc that they nail them, right? NFL is something you could see more load management. Teddy Bruschi was commenting on this. And Teddy's one of those warriors that played a ton of football, won championships with New England. It's part of that Desert Swarm defense with Arizona in the early 90s. And he went from defensive lineman to linebacker, switched positions. And Bruschi's like, yeah, with this extra game, you're going to have 17 regular season games in the NFL. You could see some guys in the NFL practicing load management. And you've always seen that, too, in week 17 or week 16, excuse me, especially if you have a fantasy football league where your league goes all the way through week 16 and some backs will sit down or some of the skill guys or quarterbacks. Listen, we're not going to play our stud. We're already in the postseason. We've already got the bye. Our position won't move with its win. There you go. But you're having a 17th game. We'll see how it's decided. But that's something that is going to be on the horizon more so with this extra game in the NFL.
Yeah, and I don't like 17 games. I think 16 was already a marathon.
It's a lot.
16 was already a marathon for these guys. If you're going to add a 17th, give everybody a bye week before the playoffs start.
Yeah, space it out. I just
give them 1 week off for the playoffs start. Because how many times do you see teams just? I mean, you're talking about load management. You're saying we're going to get some. I'd rather we stay away from it. How often do you see guys in that last week of the season, teams throw out their starters for, you know, one quarter and then let their backups take the rest of the game, or even not even play their starters at all? And it takes a game away. And if you're going to add a 17th game to get this extra revenue, you should be expecting that there's going to be teams that aren't going to be playing their guys in the 17th game. So, as opposed to giving them a 17 game and going straight into the playoffs, give them a week off. Give everybody in the NFL a week off. Let them get right, and let's get ourselves a good competitive playoffs.
I don't think and you played it at a high level in high school, so there were games and practices you were sore afterwards, right? I don't think we can comprehend the amount of violence, and even if you've been up close and personal in an NFL game, the speed and the physicality and just how brutal, we love it, but just how brutal it is on another body, I don't think you can put into words. And you talk to guys that play on the lines of scrimmage, and brother, it is absolutely a death march marathon to get through. And you're not healthy and you're playing hurt because your contracts aren't guaranteed and you're trying to take care of your body. You're still getting your lifts in. You're still getting your game plans in. While contact isn't what it used to be, you'd earn your money for the season a lot of times during training camp where you'd have two-a-days. Don't have that anymore. But you got to be a professional and go out and crush people off the edge on 3rd and 8 or on 1st and 10, you're going to run Zeke up the middle. We're going to talk to Cedric Golden here in about 30 minutes. I mean, Dallas was great because they were incredible on the offensive line. Their offensive line would crush your defensive line. And, oh, by the way, here's Ezekiel Elliott coming downhill. It's a real thing. And you talk to some NFL guys, and they're just like, bro, it's They love the game. They love the living it provided, but it is so vicious to their bodies. And they're in great shape, and they're young. They're low, you know, early 20s to early 30s. I mean, I just don't think you have a concept of how truly brutal it is on a human body. And this is, we're talking 2020, 2021. We're not talking the dark ages of the Howie Long era or the John Matuszak era or the Kenny Stabler era, where guys just, they haven't lived that long. Their quality of life's brutal after age 40 or 45 or 50. And then you have the CTE thing. So, and that's not just to pass over CTE, obviously not, but you see the effects of it.
I mean, these guys are taking harder hits than you and I could even comprehend on a weekly basis, if not a daily basis.
You're doing it for 3.5 hours, 60 to 90 plays.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, just to think about the amount of damage these guys are taking. Cole Beasley played in the playoffs on a broken leg,
mm-hmm.
and he could handle it. Like, imagine just how much a broken leg would hurt you or me. This guy's out there playing on it because he takes hits that cause him that much pain on a weekly basis.
And eventually, you kind of get numb to the pain, or you find a way to get numb to the pain. Husker baseball trying to avoid a painful weekend. They want to continue this march towards the Big Ten regular season title. Huskers enter in at 23-11. Northwestern, 4 games under .500. They're on the bus. They're ready to go. And first pitch tonight, 6:30 at Haymarket. Pretty awesome. Here's Will Bolt.
I think they get on a bus tomorrow morning to come play. So I've talked to their coach this week, Coach Allen, and that's, unless something happens between today and tomorrow, that's the plan. They'll be on a bus headed this way and get going on Friday.
So here's the rundown on Northwestern. They can hit, and they can hit well. Nebraska's pitching better be on their A game.
Yeah, what stands out is they've got a lot of power through their lineup. A lot of guys that scare you, raise your blood pressure a little bit when they step in the box, and still hitting for a pretty good average on top of that. So they've been a team that's put up a lot of runs at times. And, that thing about it is they're going to be, you can look at it one of two ways. It may be rusty for having not played a couple of weeks, but also at the same time, everybody's pretty fresh too. This time of year, at times the grind of playing, maybe your bat speed's not as good as it was early in the season, mm-hmm. or maybe some arms are a little bit more fatigued. I mean, they're going to be refreshed, ready to rock. They always play us tough. They're going to be ready to play. So from a scouting standpoint, I mean, there's probably enough of a sample size this year where you can kind of get some information from what they've done up to this point. But, for us, it's just all about, it's honestly all about us. It's all about us playing the game that we're capable of playing. And regardless of the opponent, we respect every opponent that we play. Our guys are going to be ready to play and not look too far ahead. Just be our best on Friday.
You know, I think that's the biggest thing I take away from Will Bolton, Nebraska baseball. His guys are always ready to play. And more times than not, they're not beating themselves. And I don't think they get an inflated head. I think they truly do. And you got to do it in baseball anyway, but I don't think they overlook many opponents. Base runners are going to be key. Nebraska, Northwestern, the top two teams when it comes to stolen bases, so extra bases are going to be hard to come by here. And this is huge. We talk about kind of a mandatory sweep, easier said than done, but you get three in a row this weekend, that's so key. As you've got this log jam for first with Indiana, Michigan, Nebraska, you take three this weekend, that could be monstrous. We'll wind down hour one with Hail Varsity.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Thank you, Kramer. Winding down this first hour, it's Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, and find us on Twitter. Give us a follow at Schmidt_radio, at Herbal Essence on Twitter, where you find Elijah. You can email Chris at HailVarsity.com, and get the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Give us a rating. Give us some feedback. We love hearing from you. Bill Dolman's 10 minutes away. We will dive into Bill Dolman's playlist if we're going to put together this long-term look at summer concerts kicking off a football season. I'm sure Bill Dolman will have some musical ideas. More thoughts on some Big Red football from Billy D. Truth or rumor if he snuck into Farm Aid in 87. And then Cedric Golden. We'll dive into some NFL with Cedric. Do you love him or do you hate him when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys? You might have a little gray area, but you're either one or the other. So Cedric will kind of run down some Cowboys thoughts post-draft and some Randy Gregory insight. Also, his take on Big Ten baseball from Big 12 and SEC country. Cedric's been covering college football, the NFL, NBA, and been to the College World Series a lot in his career with the Austin American Statesman. So let's talk about chasing Indiana right there with Michigan. Will Bolt is again focusing on tonight, tomorrow, Sunday, and it's in that order. It's game one, laser focused. His team, presumably laser focused. That's his mantra. But he was asked to kind of talk a little bit about in his press conference this week the race for number one in the Big Ten.
Again, we needed to get back to playing better baseball. The weekend at home with Rutgers wasn't, as we've talked about, it wasn't from a lack of trying the first two games. I mean, we were right there to win both of those games. Now, Sunday was not obviously acceptable in any way, shape, or form. And we just wanted to make sure we were ready to bounce back mentally from that. And we did that. That's what we needed to see, quite honestly, was let's not worry about anything else other than just getting back to playing our brand of baseball, make it all about us, make it all about taking care of what we do best. And so, again, that's got to continue to be our message. That's going to continue to be our message is let's not worry about the things that we can't control. We can't control what other teams do. We can't control anything up to this point other than just us and going out and playing the style of baseball that we know helps us be successful. So that'll continue to be the message, and that'll continue to be what the dialogue is with the team, from the captains to the rest of the players on the team. And you just can't get caught up in what's going on around you. You just can't, because you make it more than it should be. And these guys have played hard all year. I mean, played as hard as any team I've ever been around. They've competed as hard as any team I've ever been around. We do that, I will be proud of them no matter what. That's really all we ask of them. So that shouldn't put any more pressure on your shoulders when you know that that's all you got to do is just show up and compete, get after it, and we'll take the results however they may come.
Let's get you qualified now. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865, the ESPN Memorial Day kickoff. Caller 9 now qualifies the Weber Grill, the gift card to Campbell's, the gift card to Leon's Gourmet Grocer. Caller 9 qualifies a week from today. That giveaway for the grill, the gift card to Campbell's, the gift card to Leon's. Caller 9, 466-3776.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Hour two, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Don't forget the weekend edition tomorrow at 7 a.m. Elijah, are you in for that, or is it Damon Barr and his handle of rum?
I believe it's going to be Damon Barr's final Saturday morning show, if I have the schedule up correctly.
He is already staking out the, bro, I am graduated, and I am not waking up.
Yeah, I'll leave the ringer on just in case. It's his. He's not the type to call in sick, so maybe he'll call in.
No, he's been an Ironman. Actually, quite frankly, both of you are relegated to. There's an armed guard that doesn't let you leave the studios Friday to Saturday a lot of times, and that tradition started by the one and only Pride of Fairbury, Bill Dolman, with us, NBC Sports. Follow Bill on Twitter at Bill Dolman. And Billy D, kind enough to sit in last Thursday. Pride of Fairbury, how you doing, man?
You know, I'm doing okay. Much better than the guy wandering through the stadium at Coors Field the other day, who probably still has a one-punch hangover, but I'm doing much better than that.
Yeah, been to Coors and took Junior and his team there. That was one of the baseball tournaments we went to, I think, back in 16 or 17. It was great. It was 12 home runs between the Diamondbacks and Rockies, and it was fantastic. There was not angry Padre fan who clearly has martial arts Navy SEAL background to his resume that is going to shut up loud, obnoxious Rocky fan. You know, Denver's kind of a chill city. You can get a lot of medicinal things there. And someone had just had enough of Rockies fan. And that was one. Was that a Wednesday night knockout shot? That was incredible. I don't know if that was better or the guy and the gal fighting in North Carolina over gas. But the harder hit was by the Padres fan.
Well, no doubt. My guess is that's probably a San Diego guy living in Colorado, given the fact that much of the exodus of California has led people to Denver. That maybe that was a San Diego fan expecting to see Fernando Tatis, but I think was not playing because of a positive test or whatever the reason was. So maybe he had forked over the cash to go to the game, was agitated anyway, and dude from Colorado just had to have been mouthing off the whole game. But that was a hell of a punch.
Yeah, but what I'll say is that was more entertaining than most of the Rockies baseball.
They've not been good.
No, they've been bad, so glad we got that. And then the guy who got punched didn't even press charges.
No, he probably deserved it. He probably had 37 too many Coors and is what it is.
That's my guess, is he had nobody to back him up of his buddies. Like, dude, you brought it on yourself.
Well, I love, and
you got decked by a Padres fan of all things.
Well, it was young Padres fan who clearly had the reach advantage. And what's funny is you had two or three Rockies fans, like, after the fact, dude gets lit up and down for the count, night time. You had two or three Rockies fans converge on the guy, and they were kind of half-heartedly, you know, grabbing him, worried about their own fear and safety. Did you ever see or experience or hear of urban legend fights? And I ask that because of all the Nebraska games you've covered in your career, you've been to Faurot Field in Columbia, Missouri. You've been to Boulder a lot. And my favorite experience was three Western Nebraska ranch dudes that we were sitting by in Boulder in 97. Two trust fund pukes tried to pick a fight, and they got tossed. And then the Boulder Gold Coats removed the trust fund pukes. That was hilarious. So justice was served in the end zone in Boulder, where it says Colorado, where Amon Green would always run halfway up the ramp to it. Did you experience, not participate, mind you, but experience or see any fights in your tours and travels with Nebraska?
Not really with Nebraska that come to mind, but when you're talking about that, maybe the best fight that I ever witnessed firsthand at an event that I was working at, a game that I was working, was, believe it or not, was Houston Comets women's WNBA game back around 1998, 99, 2000, somewhere in there, when I was in my first stint in Houston. And you recall the Houston Comets, led by Tina Thompson, Cynthia Cooper, and the gal from Texas Tech.
Swoops.
Cheryl Swoops.
Yeah.
So they'd won like three WNBA titles in a row. They had it going on. Dan Chancellor, who's a terrific guy, was their coach. Could not have been more laid back. But anyway, it's a WNBA game. And I think I might have been a reporter at the game, right? I don't remember exactly. But at the end of the game, there was just this huge brawl that broke out about 20 rows up from the floor, just off to my right. I had my camera guy. I said, hey, you gotta get this. And, I mean, it looked like, a Royal Rumble had spilled out of the ring and into the crowd on Monday Night Raw or something. I mean, it was pretty remarkable what, that group of female basketball fans was able to do. And a lot of people were just standing there just kind of stunned watching it. But they were spilling over the seats and over the rows. And hair grabbing, and it went on a lot longer than the Padre fan over the Rocky fan.
It escalated quickly, as they say.
But it was a WNBA game in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Bill Dolman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So, Bill, a thought here. Could we see this be the norm? The norm being a major act coming to Memorial Stadium to kick off a football season with Garth Brooks doing the first concert since the 87 Farm Aid. Were you with T.O. In the late 80s? And were you part of that that entourage with T.O. and Willie Nelson? And what did Willie smell like?
I don't recall the two of them hanging out together all that much.
There's two pictures. There's two pictures, and T.O. looks totally ticked off that Willie's, you know, probably trying to light the field turf.
Well, that was a big deal, and I remember, I think about it in the World Herald, there's that famous picture of Tom after Farm Aid taking a look at the field and making sure that everything was okay and kind of gave him the thumbs up or whatever. There was always concern about what that was going to do to the fake stuff. I do remember when Garth Brooks came to Lincoln and he had that 5-night concert thing, and he did the live video it was spectacular. I got a chance to see, I think, two of those, one of the best concerts I've ever seen. But he came to football practice one day. Apparently he wanted to see the Huskers up close and was standing on the sidelines, and I happened to be there. And he said, "Hi, I'm Garth." And I said, "Hi, I'm Bill. You doing okay? Yeah, how about you? Yeah, fine." So he was a really nice guy. And then Tom kind of gathered the team around, and I remember just kind of personnel support staff, but people knew that Garth Brooks was there, and Tom's like, "Okay, apparently this fellow would like to say a few words to you." So that was kind of it. And then Garth Brooks talked to the team for a couple seconds, and that was it. And he was very nice guy, but he was kind of a dude that was there to watch practice and said hello to everybody. And it's great that Nebraska's doing this. I think it's a great way to kick off the season. I think it's a reward for Nebraska, Nebraska fans. I think it sets the tone of Nebraska culturally, not just for the football season. I think we saw that a little bit in the spring game with a we're back mentality to somewhat life is normal. And I think this is just a real healthy thing for the state and maybe even, to a certain extent for the rest of the country, just to see what is possible. So I think it's wonderful that Nebraska is doing it for its fans. I think it's a great way to start things off.
Bill Dolman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, @ Bill Dolman on Twitter, the Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports. So the time that Garth got to meet Bill, I'm glad we got to hear this. Did you and Henry Rollins hook up with Garth after the fact on O Street?
No, I'm not sure that was around the same time. Let's just put it that way. But yeah, that, I guess that would be two celebrity boxes to check for me.
All right, so other brushes with greatness. People remember meeting Bill Dolman. Who else? I mean, did you run into Will Chamberlain? Did you say what's up to Jimmy Buffett? You and Van Morrison. I mean, how far does this the 6-degree stretch?
One of my favorite Jimmy Buffett stories was told to me by Pat Croce,
he's nuts. That guy's awesome. The former GM of Philly, right?
He owned him. Okay. He was a physical therapy guy who made it big, and then ends up buying the 76ers. And then he's the guy that famously drafted Allen Iverson, and wonderful guy. He and I worked the Olympics in 2016, and just had a fantastic time with him. But he was telling me the story because he's like your buddy Mike Leach. He's a big pirate guy.
Okay.
And so Pat spends a lot of time in Key West.
Okay.
And hunting pirates and sunken treasure and all those kinds of things. In fact, I think they moved the Pirate Museum to Tampa St. Pete a few years back. But anyway, he's down in Key West, and became a pretty big celebrity, and everybody thought Pat's pretty cool. Well, he became friends with Jimmy Buffett. And so he's down there hanging out in Key West, and he said, he got to be so popular in Key West that he'd hang out in Jimmy Buffett's nondescript garage recording studio, and then get on a couple of bikes, and they'd ride their bikes to Margaritaville or something. But he said it was always funny when he and Jimmy Buffett were out riding their bikes in Key West, people would always say, "Hey, Pat, hey, Pat, hey, Pat." And
they wouldn't say, "What's up, son of a sailor?"
They're more interested in talking to Pat and getting his autograph than the guy he was riding the bike with.
That's hilarious. Leach was with us this week, and he was loading up on Cuban coffee to go on his bike ride around the island. And, we just got to go down to Key West. You call Pat up, I'll call the pirate up, and we'll go drink on one of their boats.
My question is, does Leach still commute to Starkville from Key West on a daily basis, or when needed at practice other than Saturdays?
I didn't ask him that, but he was happy to be back in Florida. I'll say that.
That goes without saying.
Bill, let's bring this around full circle. We started this by talking about Garth Brooks. So let's say the Huskers bring this concert back next season, 2022, and they call up Bill Dolman and say, "Bill, we need your opinion. Who do you want to come play Memorial Stadium?" What short list of names are you giving them?
Well, of course, for me, it would be Van Morrison, but, you know, that's just me, you know, and then around the Guinness for everybody in the house. But
you're pro beer. Good. We got that out. We need alcohol sales.
I think that anytime you can get Garth Brooks to come, I think that would be great. So I would just make it a regular thing, kind of like when they have a Blues Traveler. I don't think it's happening this year. The Blues Traveler used to be the every July 4th house band at Red Rocks.
Oh, wow.
I think maybe that'll just kick off the season every year with Garth Brooks coming to town, or whoever Larry the Cable Guy has in his Rolodex.
That'd be
cool. just do a double bill there.
What would you two do for the draw? Do you think Bono and crew could, or Foo Fighters or something like that?
As long as they don't mess up the field. Then I think everybody, who doesn't like the Foo Fighters?
No, exactly. You know? And people like U2. I mean, you and I like U2. I don't know, Elijah, do you give a damn about U2?
I know the album Joshua Tree. That's about it.
So yes, okay. I've heard of this album called Joshua Tree. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think U2 is in the forefront of the young people's minds right now. But hey, Foo Fighters is still big. People my age still like Dave Grohl.
Yeah, well, if you really want to get it going on, how about like a Josh Groban and Michael Blue Bay double billing? I think that would really get people fired up for the season ahead.
Jump off the 99th row. No parachute. I'd just say let's wherever you were sitting for the spring game. I would launch.
1,000,000th row, seat 12.
Yes. Bill, what's on your docket this weekend? What's shaking for you before we say goodbye? About a minute left here.
Well, I'm just counting down the 10 games left in the college baseball regular season for the Huskers. I'm looking at the 20 sites that came out today. And first of all, Nebraska's got a pretty healthy schedule going down the stretch with, what, two games against Indiana. You got two games against Northwestern in the middle of the pack. You got two against Ohio State, and then you've got the three with Michigan. So you got 10 games to go. If Nebraska were to go 7-3 in that, win the Big Ten, and if the college baseball powers that be are wanting to generate some interest and have people in the seats, I watch a little college baseball, and pandemic or not, there's just nobody there, right? If you want people in the seats to get charged for the road to Omaha, then And maybe that series against Rutgers in Lincoln a couple of weeks ago was devastating to Nebraska's chances. But if you got there's no Big Ten site amongst the final 20. So I think there should have been some incentive for Indiana or Nebraska or Michigan, who has the chances to win the Big Ten title, that you're at least on the list.
Yeah.
And I think college baseball has done itself a great disservice by putting that list out. I know the Big Ten is not a power conference, but come on.
Big Ten did itself a disservice by not allowing non-conference games to have a money RPI. This is on the Big Ten.
Totally agree. That's just par for the course for 20 and 21 out of the Big Ten. That's too bad. But I think Will Bolt's got his team turned around in the right direction at this time, and I could see them going 7-3 down the stretch and winning the Big Ten title, but I just wish they'd been at least had that little carrot out there that if they win this thing, they got a chance to host, which they should, because you know Nebraska fans would flock as well as any other place in the country. So that's really disheartening, I think, for Will Bolt and company as they go down this final 10 games.
Billy D, we'll talk next week. Thanks for the time today.
All right, go Big Red. See you guys.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk some world of sports. We welcome in our man from the Austin American Statesman, Cedric Golden, back with us. And Cedric, what's new, man? It's been a while. How you been hanging?
Man, it's great, Chris. We survived that big freeze down here in February, and I figured out how to operate my gas fireplace for the first time in 10 years and hoping to never use it again, but we'll see.
You know, the fireplaces I've seen down in Texas most of them rival the Game of Thrones, right? You guys don't have to use them all that often, but man, they're impressive when you walk into a living room.
They really are, and they're more impressive when it's 8 degrees outside. You gain a new appreciation for them.
I bet. Check out Cedric, of course, his podcast on Second Thought, and it covers NFL, Texas, and all things. So I want to start off with the Cowboys, Cedric, and we'll get to some college baseball thoughts. But overall, were you impressed? Did Dallas do what they needed to do in the draft? I know they went real heavy defense. We've seen Micah Parsons up close and personal pre-opt-out, even back during the recruiting cycle. He was showing off that 4-3 speed, run-and-go routes during a June summer night camp here in Lincoln way, way back. We're talking 2015, 2016. And everybody in red was drooling. No shot of getting him, mind you. But, you fast forward to now, and he looks like a guy that can fill that Sam Backer spot in a really good linebacking core. Overall, though, Dallas favored again to win the East.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they didn't overthink this, Chris. They knew coming in that they needed help on defense. 8 of their 11 picks went on that side of the ball, and I wrote a couple of days before the draft that they should go with one or two cornerbacks, J.C. Horn or Patrick Surtain the second, Horn out of South Carolina, Surtain out of Alabama. And lo and behold, the two teams picking in front of them, Carolina and Denver, scooped up those corners right before Dallas. So they traded out of number 10 and got who many believe to be the best defensive athlete in the whole draft, in Micah Parsons. And I like the pick. I know linebackers don't go as early anymore as they used to, but the days of the big, bulky, Dick Butkus-type linebackers are in the past. You need guys now that are in sideline to sideline, guys that can cover a running back coming out of the backfield, guys that can blanket a tight end in pass coverage. Those are the kind of guys that are starting to proliferate these NFL defenses. Smaller, faster linebackers who run like wide receivers. And so he fits that bill. And they have Leighton Vander Esch, who they decided not to take advantage of the fifth-year option with him. So he might just play out the string this season. And then they're just going to move on to a smaller, faster defense, because I think that's what's working. You look at Tampa Bay with Levante David, guys like that. If you want to go old school, guys like London Fletcher, smaller, faster linebackers, they're kind of the rage now. And then they come back in the with Kelvin Joseph in the second round, which is a good cornerback out of Kentucky. So they really address some needs. And, they're still going to be able to fill some spots in free agency. As far as going in with a plan and coming out being better than you were when you went in, I think Jerry and company did a good job.
Cedric Golden's with us here, Austin American Statesman, Hail Varsity Radio. You hit the nail on the head with the Levante David, and Levante is one of our favorites, and obviously saw him here at Nebraska, and he's been great in Tampa. And yeah, I mean, you look at the offenses today, more of a spread influence in a lot of NFL offenses when you look at what the Chiefs are doing. And you need that guy that absolutely can come off the edge and make a TFL on the quarterback. But above all, can they be as good as safeties, right, in coverage? What's your word on Dan Quinn as he's taken over the defense? What's his history? And then how do the puzzle pieces in Dallas fit with what he likes to do?
Well, he's obviously an upgrade over Mike Nolan. And, you know, Mike Nolan, it just didn't work out. And, you know, even though he's from an NFL family, I just think that Dan Quinn is got to be the right guy. He's been everywhere. 49ers, Dolphins, Jets, Seahawks assistant, a defensive coordinator at Florida University. Back with the Seahawks. And then 2015 to 2020, he was a head coach at Atlanta. So I really think that what he's going to bring in, and his teams at Atlanta, they were based on speed. They were based on speed, and they had small linebackers like Deion Jones, and they had good athletic tackles like Grady Jarrett. Those are the kind of guys, you know, those are the kind of guys that they could get after the quarterback with. And of course, we all remember in Houston, I was there. You're up 28-3 at halftime, and you don't get it done. Mm. You lose that lead to the New England Patriots, and you forgot what brought you there, and that was running the football with Devontae Freeman. They couldn't stop him, and then you got away from that, and Tom Brady's Tom Brady. So I'm very excited to see what he does with Dallas. Dallas has they have a lot of gaping holes on defense. You drafted to those needs. Now you have to coach these guys up to fill those positions. I'm not really worried about the offense, Chris. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dak Prescott's already walking around without a limp, and he's in drills. Ezekiel Elliott is going to try to address those critics that say he's lost a step and a half. And then you have some really good receivers, CeeDee Lamb, and guys like that. And so I'm very interested to see defensively. That's why Jerry brought him in here to get stops. He's a defensive-minded coach. Mike McCarthy is an offensive-minded coach. So for me, I think that could be a really good mix. That is if Mike McCarthy's not past his prime. He had some really questionable coaching decisions last year during games that got some people's attention. Hopefully that was just a bad mulligan with him coming back for the first time in a few years. Hopefully he'll be back to being the Mike Quinn that got the Packers in the Super Bowl.
Cedric, you mentioned the Cowboys offense, and let's move there really fast if you don't mind. Lots of star power on that offense. You listed off CeeDee Lamb, Ezekiel Elliott, but all eyes are going to be on Dak Prescott. And do you think that Dak Prescott can get back to the level he was playing at before the injury? I mean, before the injury last year, he was on pace to break some NFL records with the passing yardage he was putting up.
He was the best quarterback in the league for like the first four games. Now, I know, mind you, they were playing from behind in some of those games, and he was having to throw it more when they weren't able to run it as much. But I do believe the big question, guys, is are you going to retool that offensive line? And that's going to be the biggest question going into this season. Tyrod Smith is an all-pro left tackle, but he's probably well past his 29, 30 years of age. He's probably playing with the body of a 38 or 39. When your back goes out, man, there's no coming back from that full-fledged. Most people we know that had one back surgery are going to have another. That's just how that is. So I hope that they can retool that line. Travis Frederick, I believe, was either one that retired. He had the syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to replace him. And so there are so many pieces that are missing. And just a few, just a couple of years ago, they were easily the best offensive line in the league. And it doesn't take long for that to go away. They drafted Connor Williams from Texas, and Zach Martin's still around. But for Travis Frederick's the one who retired, you got your other tackle, Lyle Collins, who had his moments. He's coming off a hip surgery. So all of a sudden your offensive line's gotten old. And then you have a quarterback coming back from major ankle surgery. We are not sure if he's going to be running around like he used to run around. Is he going to slow down a little bit and be more of a pocket passer? You know, and if he is, he's got a bevy of receivers, and he's got Ezekiel Elliott behind him. But we have to see what kind of Dak Prescott we have, and then we're going to look at the offensive line. They may not be ground and pound like they used to. They may be more of a in protection mode. But either way, it's going to all come down to Dak. If Dak is the same Dak we saw before he got hurt against the Giants, then the Dallas Cowboys would be fine offensively.
Cedric Golden's with us, Austin American Statesman. Some NFL thoughts on the Cowboys. Cedric, we'll move on here real quick from the NFL, but I need to get your take. What's the prognosis for Randy Gregory? Got to ask you the token Husker question.
You know, Randy Gregory, we've talked about Randy Gregory over the years, and you want Randy Gregory to do well. It's always up in the air with him. The one thing that I really admire about Jerry is he's kind of a guy who gives a second chance. Mm-hmm. I believe the fact that they let the Missouri kid walk, Alden Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that they let him walk, I think that might be a benefit to Randy Gregory, you know, because they're going to need him. They just have some pieces. Tank Lawrence up front is a very good defensive lineman. But you look at Durant Armstrong from Kansas, Bradley and Nye. They signed a free agent, Terrell Basham. And then they have bringing a guy, Rondell Carter, back from last year. Those guys don't set the world on fire. Chris, Randy Gregory in limited action, he had 3.5 sacks, 21 tackles, and he had 12 quarterback pressures, 3 forced fumbles. I'm just looking at those numbers here. So if you can get more reps out of Randy Gregory, stays out of trouble. That's the big one. Let's not overlook it. Randy Gregory stays out of trouble. If Randy Gregory can give you 35 tackles and 8 sacks and 15 quarterback pressures opposite DeMarcus Lawrence, then he's found himself a home, because that's what they want. And so he had a really – if you think about a guy that's been gone for 2 years, he had a really good year last year. And so I know they're excited about giving him some increased opportunities up front to see, okay, you did this in limited play. Let's see what you do if we give you 5 or 10 more snaps a game. You're going to make some more impact. So if I'm him, I'm looking at this as a new lease on life.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio lesson?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Cedric Golden back with us. Aaron Rodgers, do you like Denver? Do you think Green Bay? Do you think Jeopardy? Where's Cedric's compass going?
Well, my personal compass goes to Olivia Munn, but since this is a sports show, Jeopardy. Real quick story, where I'm from in my hometown, there were 2 ABC affiliates, and they would show Jeopardy. One ABC affiliate would show Jeopardy at 4 o'clock, and then the other affiliate would show it at 4:30. So I invite my girlfriend at the time, who I'm now married to for 20 years, I would invite her over at 4:30. She wasn't from Tyler, so she had no idea. But she'd sit there, and we were watching, and I'm just rattling off all these answers, and just she thinks she's married to – she thinks she's dating Albert Einstein at the time, because I'm so dang smart. And so my wife, my sister tells her, girl, he watches the 4 o'clock one, and then he's trying to impress you with the 4:30 one. So she was impressed enough to stick around. But if you're asking me where Aaron's going to play, he's got to play at Green Bay.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy to deal Aaron Rodgers. What are you going to get from the Denver Broncos for Aaron Rodgers? Drew Locke? Good luck with that one.
Von Miller? I don't know. I mean, they could package something. I just don't know how serious he is about this game of chicken and retirement. And, I mean, the GMs obviously torqued him off, you know?
Aaron Rodgers did not want to retire.
No, I know.
He's not ready to retire. Just won an MVP. And he hates the GM. And the GM never didn't draft a receiver 2 years ago when he could have had T. Higgins. And you drafted a quarterback from UTEP. Good Lord, what is that about? And so I don't blame Aaron for being upset, but you could tell last year watching him on the field, he was having fun with those younger guys like Aaron Jones and Marquise Valdes-Scantling and Devontae Adams. He was having a ball with all those weapons, and so I don't think he wants to go, but I know he hates the GM. I think that the Packers are going to try to smooth it over, try to make a couple of moves in free agency. Like you said with Denver, though, man, it begins and ends. You got to go Von Miller and one of those young receivers before we even start talking, if you want Aaron Rodgers. So, and I don't think that the Broncos are going to part ways with the career leader in sacks. So, I just don't think it's going to amount to a hill of beans. Cedric Rodgers is going to be at Lambeau this fall.
You know, it'd be good to see Cedric Golden's with us. Cedric, from afar, your take on Big Ten baseball. Will Bolt's done a great job, but the Big Ten didn't do any non-conference games. The RPI is not good for a lot of the teams. It looks like five are projected to get to the postseason. You see the SEC and the Big 12 up close and personal as often as you want. What's your take on the Big Ten as a league right now? Is it better? Is it still distant? What's your view?
I've seen some of the projections, and I haven't seen any of the Big Ten baseball teams. So I know that Michigan is up there with a good RPI, but I'm you know, having watched some SEC and watched some Big 12. The Longhorns are as good as anybody in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've watched them up close. They've got it in all. They've got hitting, pitching, and defense. TCU is very good. I watched that series. So the Big Ten, I just don't really have a huge take on it because, first of all, they didn't play many games.
Right.
And so in most years you can sneak around ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, and if you catch it on the right day, you'll catch a Big Ten baseball game, you know, in April. Or March, and I didn't. I haven't seen any of those games. And the one thing I know about the Big Ten, if the projections aren't good enough, they'll just change the rules and make sure their guys get in. So that's the power of the Big Ten.
Cedric, we'll see how things shake out. I hope to see you back at Omaha soon for some CWS, man. 50% capacity. We're excited to get things back to normal. Last thought here. How are things shaping up for Sark down there in Bevo Land?
Well, Sark announced to us that he's going to be the only coach talking to the media. So we're probably never going to meet his assistant. So he's following the Nick Saban playbook, word for word, letter for letter. Except for I don't know about the W. That's the one letter I have most questions about. So if he can follow it all the way to the W, and get 10 or 11 wins, then he's just going to be that really good coach who wouldn't let us talk to the media. But if he doesn't, then, you know, columnists are going to be columnists. And you're like, well, we knew that he was a great assistant. But, you know, jury's still out, Chris. I don't know that Steve Sarkisian's a great head coach. He was an okay head coach. He was a great offensive coordinator. But now you're piloting one of the biggest ships in all of college football in them. And fair or not, the expectations here are the same. Even though they've won only two championships in 50 years, they expect to be in that mix every year. So we'll see how he handles this pressure cooker. It's a lot easier to be Sark's play caller than it is. I mean, it's a lot easier to be Saban's play caller than it is to be at the helm of a traditional power.
Cedric Golden with us, Austin American Statesman. Ced, we'll do this again. Appreciate your extended time today, man. It was fun to chat.
All right, so good to hear from you again, bro. Take care.
Cedric Golden, love chatting ball with him. Some cool thoughts there on the Cowboys, on Randy Gregory, the search for that Levante David-type linebacker. in the NFL, and we'll see where Sark goes. Not a good look for Iowa football and Kirk Ferentz. Ferentz is none. This is just out here from the Cedar Rapids Gazette. And none of the Iowa contracted football coaches, including head coach Kirk Ferentz, participated in the voluntary salary reduction of Iowa athletics. It was announced last summer initially by AD Barta. It was said that, you know, Kirk went along with the pay cut, and coaches were asked to consider the participating in the voluntary temporary salary reduction. They didn't do that, and Iowa lost some of their Olympic sports. That those sacrifices had to be made, but Fran McCaffrey, Lisa Bluter, and other assistants made sacrifices, and you look at the shortfall. We're talking the deficit driven by the $23.9 million in budgeted football expenses as part of the reductions. So if you would have passed on those bonuses, it could have helped save the athletic department $430,000. The athletic employees who did take the temporary pay cut saved the department $1.6 million. Some of the non-contracted staff and merit employees didn't have a choice. They took their pay cut. Now, I'll say this. The bonus that you get for going to a bowl game that ended up being canceled, that additional compensation, they took that money too. The assistants did. And Ferentz's yearly increase of $100,000 is now from $2.6 million to $2.7. I'll say this, though. The Ferentz family did set up a $100,000 gift each year, so he is giving back. But this isn't a great look.
Chime in. Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Last thought here, more on this Iowa compensation and deferred compensation. We mentioned Ferentz and football did not take the voluntary pay cut. Gary Barta, the AD's base salary is $600,000, gets another $400,000 in compensation. Just over $1 million a year is what Barta's rolling in. Gary Barta last year for Iowa volunteered to reduce his total compensation by over 30%. When times got tough and everybody was hit hard by the pandemic, he also shaved off 15% of his $650,000 number that was supposed to obviously give him an annual bump. So he dropped his take home to $552,000, and then he also shed another $300,000 in deferred compensation for future budgets and another $150,000. There's a lot of numbers I'm throwing at you, but the point of this is Gary Barta put his money where his mouth was when it came to belt tightening. So Barta's been on a lot of committees. Iowa's had pretty successful programs, and you know, Ferentz has donated over $1 million back to Iowa during his time there. But right now you have the Cedar Rapids Gazette kind of saying, look, Kirk, everyone else had to have some mayonnaise sandwiches last year. What the hell were you doing?
And let's not act like this is going to put him on the hot seat.
For him to survive last year and the way they finished the year with the racial tension and his kid being a goon, you know, his kid's a big-time problem. They got rid of the strength coach that is very well-respected from an ability maybe not a personality, but an ability standpoint. I mean, Urban Meyer wanted to hire him at Jacksonville.
I'd say he was the strength and conditioning coach for the Jaguars for a day.
Yeah, before what the hell.
Which is really falling upwards, yeah. but what I'll say is this isn't going to put Kirk Ferentz on the hot seat, even if us Husker fans want it to. But Bo Pelini can tell you that your results on the field can only protect you from a poor public image for so long. So while this isn't going to put Kirk Ferentz on the hot seat, say Kirk Ferentz comes out in a year from now, 2 years from now, he's got a 4-8 season, a 5-7 season, which... Do I think that's going to happen? Probably not. Kirk Ferentz has built a really consistent program at Iowa. But if it does happen, then you can look back at these, you know, public relations nightmares and say, hey, Kirk, you're kind of causing us more issues to our university right now than you're helping. And that's the point where it could hurt him down the road. But right now, this I don't think is going to hurt him.
They develop as well as any program in the country, and they find two stars and send a lot of guys to the NFL, and they have not had their reload or rebuild season, i.e. 4-8 for a long time. They're in every ball game. They've had some big wins. It's time to take them down again if you're Nebraska. Let's qualify you one more time here for the ESPN Memorial Day kickoff. Caller 9 right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Caller 9 qualifies right now. The Weber Grill from Capitol Patio and the Flame Shop, the gift card to Campbell's Nursery and Garden Center, and the gift card to Leon's Gourmet Grocer. Be caller 9 now. Elijah gets your name. He'll put your name in the box. We will draw 1 week from today on the 21st. Caller 9, 466-3776, 800-825-5865, 5-7 a.m. tomorrow with Weekend Edition. Thanks.